Mr. Jewett, reel 6.
One of the things I omitted to tell you was about the sailing for boat sailing. We used to have a set of cutters at Shotley, and they were up on Davits, and when you had one part of your training was boat sailing, which was extremely good and very, very well done. They were what they called dip and lug cutters, that's with two masts, and they used to dip them, and they had these boys, they were great big, huge, the oars on these cutters were absolutely huge, you've got to believe it, they're great big things. But the boys used to row them just the same, we used to manage it somehow. But the time for going there was immediately after, if we'd been to the laundry, immediately after the laundry and parade, you doubled down to the parade ground. Well, one of that brought to mind one of the strange, you mentioned punishment, and I forgot all about that one. They had a system at Shotley where if you were stroppy in a classroom, the instructor, like Jerry or Dodger Long, he would tell you to report to the Master at Arms office, and the Master at Arms tell him to cover it. And now they used to give you, I may have this secret, slightly out of secrets, but the main object was there. They used to give you a shell. It was a prodgy, and it was a 6-inch prodgy. It weighed about 100 weight, and they used to say, "Now take that to the cook of the palace. Report to the cook." When he went to the cook, you humped it to the cook, and the cook would say, "Now you'll take that to some other department," and so to the seamanship school, and then he went to the dentist, and all went, "Oh God!" Eventually, he'd walked about 2 miles with this thing and back, and then went back. It wasn't savage, but it was quite ingenious actually. But it reminded me of the fact that going down to the to where the ships, where the boats were, Davits were, where these cutters were hoisted, which we used to sail on the river between Harwich and there, they're called these steps, and these steps, I kid you not, I don't know how many there were, I should know, the times I doubled up and down them, but that's, if boys were getting a bit tricky, because remember these boys were 15, 16 years old, they're quite a handful of something. What they used to do, used to have to go double up and down these steps. My goodness. And if you saw them, there's about 3 or 4 flights of steps, and going up to a height of, what can I say, 60 feet, I suppose, up and down, quite steep. And it was quite, it didn't half knock the stuffing out of you, I tell you, you didn't go back for more. And the thing was that if anybody got us into trouble, any boy in the mess got into trouble, he copped it afterwards. Believe you me, they didn't know I used to pelt him one. The boys themselves, you know. So,
because he got you all into trouble.
Yeah, he got us all into. Yeah, it was a matter. He didn't sort of say right. You sometimes the whole lot of us used to go have to be doubling up and down these blooming steps. But that was something I forgot all about. There was which I remembered when you. It came back to me when I was thinking of the boys, because we had to lower these on the davits. The davits had to be put out, and they were on these handles. It was all done by hydraulic, you know, and the boys handling them and lowering them into the river. And then we used to, they taught us the boat drill, you know, with the oars up and everything, and oars leaning on your oars, all the rest of it. And then, of course, this actual sailing, which I did enjoy, actually. I enjoyed sailing, actually.
Swimming. What about those that couldn't swim?
You quickly learned that actually. Sorry, I should have got. That was part of your drill in the annex. When you went to the annex, one of the first places you went to was the swimming bath. They had a wonderful swimming pool there, and all the PTIs were very good. They were smart lads. Those PTIs, I can tell you, and they used to whatever you could do. Now, luckily, I was. They have what is known as a duck suit test. Luckily, I was a good swimmer when I went there. Not excellent, just I could swim cannily. And I went in, and you had to do a duck suit. What you had to do was swim 2 lengths of the bath in a duck suit, and you put this duck suit on. But the duck suit got pretty heavy because it was no good having a swimming trunk. So the idea was, if you were clothed, you see. And I got my duck suit test. But some kids couldn't swim, and they had to go for special swimming instruction until they passed the duck suit test, and then it was marked up in your papers. you know, passed the duck success test and the date, so that they knew that every boy that left Shotley could swim. And not only swim, but he could swim a certain... That's it, enough to get away from the ship, you see. It was very sensible. I mean, you could swim far enough. It didn't have to be a good swimmer, but far enough to get away from a sinking ship, because, as you probably may or may not know, a sinking ship will take you down with it.
Medicals, during the course of those first months that you were there, were they a regular feature?
No, they weren't, actually. Not that I can remember. You had to go to the tooth, mind, they watch your teeth like nothing on earth. Well, I had a nice set of teeth when I was a kid, but they're all gone now. But the medicals, no, I can't remember. The only medical we ever got was when we got there, the usual eyesight tests, and I had 6-6 eyesight tests, and everything was put down on paper, whatever you've got, and your height, and your colour of your eyes, and all sorts of things. But on the whole, no, the medicals, they didn't have any routine medicals, no, not at all. I think most of most of it was left on trust to the instructors who watched us. They knew us all sort of pretty well each.
Many of the facilities there and the routine, you were learning the navy slang. You know,
absolutely, the whole.
It was run as a ship, in effect.
Absolutely, it was everything on Ganges was like a ship, you know. The mannering, all the expressions and everything was as if you were on a ship, you know. And there's no difference. Mess kettle, mess fannies, and so forth. I think I mentioned before about the routine for providing food, which was quite an eye opener. That's about all I can think of, I think, at the moment about my service as a boy, except that it did me no harm.
All the way through, you were presumably being marked and tested to see if you were progressing.
Yes, that's right. They would. Everybody. I'm pretty sure. I was never there as an instructor, but I'm pretty sure the instructors would have to go. But a lot of famous people were boys at Shotley. That MP Miles, what's his name? I can't remember now. He's a Conservative MP. He's not now. He's no longer now. Miles something. But it's quite a lot of lots of commanders and lots of some of these kids became commanders and senior officers. Quite a lot of them.
And the whole period finished with a passing out parade.
No, you didn't have a passing out parade as such. You know, there wasn't from Shotley. That was just. You may have done in peacetime, I don't know, but you've got to remember what happened. The war broke out in September, and we heard a buzz that there were HOs coming. Now, HOs, what HOs? Hostilities only. And that part of the barracks, they'd stopped recruiting boys, and they were sending boys that they recruited to a place called St. George's, which is another place, which is much inferior barracks to a Ganges. I mean, a Ganges boys. Absolutely cock of the hoop. To be fair, I think the Navy did spend a lot of money on us, and they expected in return us to become chiefs and petty officers at the very least, which we did, most of us did. But these HOs came, you see, and the war, that meant, you know, they were going to be... I never saw any, because what we had to do, I think the last week, we had to prepare a couple of these mess huts ready for these new HOs coming in, and they were going to take over HMS Ganges, you see, but not as boys, but as a training camp for
so the war was going on in the early months of the war,
yeah,
and there were losses at sea.
Oh yes, HMS Graf Spee. There was the Royal Oak was sunk at Scapa, the Graf Spee, the Battle of the Graf Spee, which everybody was chuffed about. I'm quite sure that happened while we were there.
Did this concern you that you might be going to sea and be hit, torpedoed, or whatever?
Not at all. No. I think on the contrary, I think most boys were sort of dying to get to sea. You know, because you had to have your mother's. You didn't in peacetime, but in wartime you have to have your parents' permission. How they got on when you didn't have any parents, I don't know, but. Those of us who had parents, we had to have the permission from their parents to send you to sea.
And you had no problem there?
No, not at all.
Parents were quite willing to sign the...
I don't think they were willing, but they did.
Yeah. How old were you when you left Shotton?
Well, our 16th birthday was there, so I'd be probably about 16 and 4 months or something like that, something around about 16 and a half, say.
And the process of transferring you away, how did that go?
Oh, well, you were all told, as you know, we had which port division you were going to, you see. That was either C, P or D, that stroke in front of your official number. And that was painted on everything under the sun. And that meant that you went to the various, the port division. My port division was Chatham, big, great big place. Very imposing when you haven't been to you see all these Nelson's figureheads and guns and nautical, and capstans and things all over the place. It's extremely nautical. And But Chatham Barracks is a whole story in itself, because I later became a gunnery, a GI. That's the absolute top man. As a boy, but everybody in Chatham Barracks have a huge parade ground. It's the largest one of its kind. In fact, it's something like about a quarter of a mile from one end to the other. It's a huge, huge thing. And when you crossed it, you had to cross it to get from the residential part of the barracks to the administrative part of the barracks, like the drill shed, as they called it. The drill shed was a bloody great thing as well. You had a GI there, Sam, and you weren't allowed to walk. You had to double. No matter who the bloody hell you were, you had to double. And even the women. They used to see young lasses and that. You, woman, double. They didn't care who you were. That was holy ground. You had to double on it. That and the gunnery school, that was another place where you had to double. There were certain places, there was no such thing as not walking. You doubled. It was so funny. But it was a great place, Chatham.
Can you describe the barracks to me at Chatham?
Yeah. Main gate, you went down, you approached the barracks from the outside. This is, well, as a boy, I went there first as a boy. You go down the slope to the drive, to the gate, to the main gate, where there was the staff, the master d'armes and the called the regulation staff, were there in a hut, regulating the coming in and the coming out of the barracks. And there was I always remember the first time I went there was this little AB, and I can remember his name. His name was Ellis, Abel Seaman Ellis, which I learned later was in that place, because you couldn't miss him for some reason or other. He was a little chap, and I couldn't miss him. And he was in when I first went into through those barrack gates, because the typical naval dockyard gates, you know, huge things. And we walked through, marched into it, and then you come to the whole sort of a parade where on the right were a number of figureheads from warships past. I can't remember their names, the Arethusa and all sorts of ships, famous ships of days gone by. These great big figureheads, you know, these women's figureheads, was a line of them. And this place, by the way, was built apparently by the Napoleonic prisoners of war, the prisoners of war from the Napoleonic Wars. It's beautifully built, huge buildings, and the box, the messing blocks, were named after admirals and things like Anson and what have you, the blocks, and they were huge things. I don't know how to describe how big they were, but there was five or six of them, all built in Victorian times, but very splendid buildings, very clean looking, with these big figureheads outside. You walk up the steps and to get into them. On the right, on the left was a wall, and when you looked over the wall, you saw this vast parade ground. And on the parade ground, you would see several classes being drilled for one thing or another. Sometimes it was bayonet drill, sometimes it was marching, sometimes, because there's quite a lot of a drill in marching in itself, and in rifle drill. I mean, rifle drills, people laugh, but for goodness sake, you apart from just ordering arms and sloping arms and things like that, the simple things, you've got to know the drill for burying an admiral, for example, you know, rest on your arms, reverse, and all that sort of thing, which later in life I learned to teach. But that's the sort of thing, the activity that it was. And I remember it was a bright sun of summer's day, that it was a bright day, some sunny day. And then, but I went to East Barracks, what they call, as a boy, to East Barracks. So I had to go right past all the men's barracks, which we were talking about. And then in the far end of the parade ground, we sort of marched left to the East Barracks, which is the boys' barracks. Again, they were all segregated, and that whole block belonged to the boys, to the boys' mess deck, to the boys. And now, boys were sort of, you weren't there long, because they didn't sort of worry too much about it. They didn't seem to worry too much about us at East Block. I don't know why it is, but we'd suddenly become men. But we had to watch then in the main, on the other side of the parade ground, I forgot to tell you, was this very, very large drill shed. It was a huge place. It would hold a couple of thousand, so you can imagine how big it was. Like for drill and so forth, for parades inside the when it was inclement weather, you see. Now in there was the drafting office, and you had to keep your eye on the drafting on the drafting board, because all the drafts were put up on a huge board in the outside the drafting office, inside the drill shed. Some of it was in chalk, which had to be because they were changed every day, sort of thing. And but there were all sorts of, they've got HMS this, that, and the other. You had to look down the names of but boys were always drafted together, and they were always kept together. You weren't sort of mixed up with the a boy wasn't mixed up with the able seaman, the leading seaman, what have you, and stokers and what have you. so looking on the drafting side, of course, the Admiralty personnel, they would have to sell for every ship that was commissioned. They were, or even if it was a replacement, they would have to have everything organised, pretty well organised, and they did too. They were extremely well organised. The new one, and they get, when you they had when you saw your name up, you had to report to the drafting office, and they gave you this famous draft chit. Now, when you had a draft chit, you were excused boots, but you had to make sure all your kit was up to date. If you had a draft chit, you had sort of priority over everybody, because you could go to the stores and rapidly replace a pair of shoes or whatever you wanted. If you'd lost your knife or something, you could replace it. Because it was a draft chit was a magic sort of a thing. But invariably, your draft accompanied about a week or a fortnight's leave. You know, if you got sent immediately on draft, it used to be called a pierhead jump. That was the naval. A pierhead jump was a naval term for somebody who'd gone for a draft and said, "Right, pack your bag, get your kit. You're on the 7 o'clock train, you know, to Scapa Flow or something." That's what you could with it without leave. That was a bit rough. But normally, with most drafts, especially large drafts, commissioning ships, you got a fortnight's leave before you went. They call it draft leave, you see, which is fair. It was very fair. Of course, you knew where you were going. That always happened to me. I knew I always got a bit.
So you went. You went to the boys' wing of Chatham.
That's right.
And
they didn't continue training there. That
didn't.
No. You just waited for your draft to go to sea. You were ready for sea then.
So how did you fill your days in?
Good question. I can't remember. I think it was school. I think we had school, and you had preparing kit. Things like that, but on the whole, and guy, you had quite a long time exploring the barracks actually, and of course you had to go to divisions in the morning, you know, parade, you know, that's the every morning had this parade, and so, but it was just the same as peacetime because it hadn't really got out of wartime routine yet, and it was a transition period, because it was rather funny, because there was a great threat of invasion coming off. You know, they were thinking, will we get invaded? And all sort of thing. Well, the boys weren't worried at all. We were highly trained. We far more than any HO, that, you know, the poor souls who, you know, like Tom Leash would tell you, they wouldn't get anything like the training that we had as peacetime boys.
And the accommodation was. Hammocks,
yeah. Yes, we slept in hammocks, the same as... this was the first time, by the way. We didn't sleep in hammocks at Shotley, HMS Ganges. It was in beds. But this was the first time we slung our hammocks. And that was when you quickly had to learn, because they had these bars going from, and you slung your hammocks and you had to sort of unlash them and sleep in them, and you had a hammock and you slept. They were very comfortable. Hammocks are very comfortable, by the way. That was the first time. Of course, you had to keep an eye on your kit mind. That was one of the things you had to watch very, very carefully, because I don't know why, but now and again little things used to disappear, like pencils and pens and what have you. But you had to keep an eye on things, like, you know. And
were you able to lock your kit away?
Oh yes, you had a locker. Every boy had a locker. Yes, all the way through the Navy, they're very fussy about that sort of thing. Yeah.
And your Shockley mess, was it the same number of people in the same room at?
An entirely different setup altogether. At Shotley, as I said, it was a sort of a cross between a Romney hut and a, it wasn't as big as that, or a Nissen hut. And but it had been a permanent one because they'd been there for about 30 or 40 years. So, and they had the heating was a large stove in the middle of the room, you know, which you had to keep polished. You know, never used it, but used it. And this, whereas at Chatham it was a different ball game altogether, it was a large wooden hut. When I say a wooden hut, it was a big wooden hut, you know, sort of held a lot of people, a lot of boys. And that was where you went to, in the boys, they had various sort of messes, you know, it was partitioned so that they knew who you were. And that was your interim time at... before going to sea. I mean, you got weekend leaves, you know, what you call Friday Wiles. Friday Wild Monday, I think, is a Yorkie expression, but it's a naval expression.
And what did you do on your weekend leave?
Well, you went home. It was quite... leave in the Navy was quite a funny thing. Everybody went down to Rochester Station and or Gillingham and got on the train there. You had a number of passes. I think it was 4 a year passes, leave passes you were allowed. You didn't waste them if you could help it. They were free, you see. The rest of the time you had to pay, but I used to pay because it was... I only lived a few stops up the line to where I lived, you see. So I got home. But boys in the Navy were allowed... It was then wonderful because we could go out till 10 o'clock at night, you see. I mean, a boy at Shotley, as I told you, couldn't go out at all, whereas at Chatham you were almost treated like men, like, you know, you'd smoke and drink if you want, nobody cared, nobody knew. You didn't get any rum ration or anything, but you could go ashore. We only got a shilling, but do you realise what you could do with a shilling when you went ashore in Chatham in those times? Let me put it to you. First of all, you could go and watch a show at Barnard's, which is a variety show, you know, Palace of Variety. And you go in the gods there, and that would cost you tuppence, 2 pence. Then, when you came out, you might fancy a pint of beer. Now, a pint of beer, coming out from there, to one pint of beer, would then cost you 6 pence. It cost you 6 pence, so we've now spent 8 pence. Yes, that's right. Your meals, how did you eat? Well, fish and chips in those times was... fish was tuppence, and the chips was a penny. So that's threepence. So you could go and get a meal for... and they were great, too. Fish and chips were good. And that was your run ashore at Chatham, if you wanted to sit under a shilling. You could go ashore... And for under a shilling, you could have a night. I mean, even then, you got some money. But we're assuming you walked down there because you didn't have to. You could get a penny on the bus if you wanted. One of the funniest sights I ever saw in Chatham, I don't know when it was exactly at all, was on a Sunday afternoon. I'd been ashore and I went to a pub there called the Gibraltar. And I must have been naval seaman. I must have been later on in my service. But I'll remember it while I remember it. And there's outside of Chatham Town Hall. The Salvation Army were playing, you see. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, on a Sunday afternoon, and they were playing, like, all these lovely hymns. They were a lovely band. And all these soldiers, sailors rather, spewed out. It was 3 o'clock, you know, but spewed out of the pubs. You know, loads of them along the pubs and on Chatham High Street. And all of a sudden, one of them, it was quite spontaneous, when the band was playing, they all started dancing together. All these sailors... they were doing a sort of doing a foxtrot or whatever you call it. It was the most hilarious sight you ever saw in your life. All these drunken matelots had all had a drink or two, but they were decided to have a dance to the tune of the Salvation Army. Well, you can't help but laugh at that. Such. This is the sort of people that, you know, they
were. Was this
were.
The first time that you had beer when you went to China?
Oh, yeah. Your first drink? Yeah, it was my first drink of beer. You had to, because you've got to be a man. You've got to learn to be a man as well. And you, that was the first time I ever tasted beer was then, you know.
How long were you there?
Before I went to sea, now I've got to think, I'll have to get my service certificate out to answer that one. I was there, well, shall we say, several weeks, I think, actually, before I went to sea, because I commissioned the Phoebe. I commissioned HMS Phoebe. And that, I'd have to get my book, my things out to tell you the exact dates, which I could do. I should have done, really. I didn't think of it. And which was a cruiser. I was there for several weeks. And then I got my draft in, you know, as I told you, I got my draft chit with about 30 other boys. It's got Phoebe draft, you know, and then all the names of the boys underneath it, you see. And then all the mains, the ordinary seamen, all the able seamen who were going to HMS Phoebe, and that was it was at Govan Dockyard in Glasgow, and this was sort of really the first time I'd really been away on my own really, and we all went as boys to commission HMS Phoebe on the and it was at Govan, and I remember marching up there, seeing this magnificent cruiser. She was a Dido class cruiser, and she was absolutely wonderful. I thought, oh, this is great. We'd fight the entire German Navy with this. This is our ship, you know, boys, you know. And I got a job on the Phoebe. I went to the boy, and when you go on a ship, they give you a card with all your duties on it, which is very well organised, you know, as a boy. I was in the boys' mess deck and with all the other boys, and I enjoyed my time on the Phoebe, actually. I was on her about 6 months.
How many boys would there be altogether on
the
ship?
On the Phoebe? About 30, I should think. Yeah, about 35, as far as I remember. And
What tasks would a boy do on a vessel?
They would fight the ship just the same as any boy. So there were guns crews. I mean, the youngest VC of the First World War was Boy Cornwall in the Jutland. Well, we were just the same. Sight setters and guns crews, things like that. TS's crews sometimes, although most of that was the Royal Marines. But my job was what called DCHQ, messenger. I was a damage control headquarters in the ship. That was in the centre of the ship. And I was the messenger. Now, damage control, what it is if the ship gets hit by a torpedo or anything, then the damage control people move into action to patch up the damage. You see, that was what it was, wherever it was. Okay, waste of time, actually, from what I saw in later actions. But anyway, that was my job as a boy there. And it was the most boring job for a kid, really, because it was in the centre of the ship, but you had all kinds of equipment round. You didn't understand what the hell it was. Mountbatten station keeping equipment and all sorts. I can always remember that to this day. And I was the messenger, and that was my action stations. That's what they call my action stations. But my work day was on the ship, working the ship, scrubbing the ship, polishing brasses, what have you, you know,